Cracking Copy is a marketing and copywriting podcast where we lift the lid on writing for business and read between the lines of effective copy.
This is a podcast for creative entrepreneurs and savvy business owners like you who understand the value that great copy can bring to their bottom line.
We dive into a different aspect of writing for business in each episode, debunk the myths about how we should write, and explore the ways that writing can be fun, conversational, and creative, while also being high impact for serious results.
So listen, laugh, and learn with us, Ella Hoyos and Minnie McBride, as we share our words and wisdom in each snack-sized episode. Expect some light bulb moments, interesting guests, and practical takeaways as we crack the copy code together.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cracking Copy. I'm here today with Frenchie Ferenczi, a business consultant and advisor who helps founders, creatives to optimize their path to revenue and impact. As a freelance copywriter and solopreneur, I am all about learning more about how to make more revenue and how to make that money work harder for me. So welcome, Frenchie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I love to get into this conversation around revenue, business, and all of it. So I'm super excited to dive in today.
Good, good. But before we do, first up, I've got to just say how much I love your name.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Yes. Not only is it great alliteration, I mean, all copywriters worth their salt love a bit of alliteration. This is where both the words, or in this case, both your names in this case, start with the same consonant. So you've got the FF.
Yep.
And in loose terms, your name is also a homophone because each name, Frenchie Ferenczi, sound almost the same, but they're spelled differently.
Yep.
So the grammar nerd in me absolutely loves that.
I love it.
I did want to ask, what's the story behind your name?
So there is a bit of a story. I would say there's kind of two stories. So I was born Francesca. Legally, my name is still Francesca. So I grew up in New York. I went to a French school and everybody there called me Francesca. And then when I switched to an American school, they asked me what I wanted people to call me. And I went home and I had a conversation with my parents, and my parents got kind of oddly, perhaps, but they got nervous. They didn't want me to be nicknamed something that they weren't crazy about. So they were like, well, in Italy, the nickname for Francesca is Franci. And so we kind of Americanized it, went with Frenchy, and it stuck. And basically from then on out, I was always Frenchy. And then when I got married, I had a choice. Do I change my last name or not? And I opted not to because I really like my name, Frenchy Frenzy. And it really felt like a part of my identity in a way where I was like, I'm not giving that up. This is who I am. And, yes, I'm getting married, but I'm not going to change my name because of that. So anyways, there's kind of two components. One was controlling the nickname. And then the second was really being like, this is me and I'm owning it.
I love it. It's a win for some baked in personal branding. It's just genuine. It's you and it's gold. So very memorable name. Love it. Now, in this episode, we're going to dive into revenue making for your business, which you're an expert guide on. Now, you have a program, I think it's a program called Stay Close to the Money. My question then is, what does it mean for copywriters like me and creative business owners to stay close to the money?
Yeah. So Stay Close to the Money is a term that I actually came up with on a call with a client who is a copywriter. And I have since trademarked the phrase and all those good things to really own it. But when I think about staying close to the money, it's really not about the hustle and the grind. I think I always need to lead with that, because it can sound a little bit like just go for it and you have to win and like all of that. When I think about staying close to the money, it is really this idea that our time and energy and resources are limited. And so we really need to think about how we maximize the ROI on our time and energy every single day. And staying close to the money is this idea that we evaluate our work, our tasks, our efforts to make sure that it is as relevant as possible to our goal, which for most of us who are running businesses is revenue. So to give you an example, right, I've had people come to me and be like, my priority today is to make a reel. And also to email past clients about potentially re-engaging. I'm like, well, do the emailing the past clients first, because that is super close to the money. That is like one email and then potentially revenue on the back end of it. Whereas let's say making a reel on Instagram is creating the reel, which can take annoyingly long.
Yes.
Posting it, hoping people engage and comment and take some sort of action from it. Maybe that driving to a conversation with someone, and then maybe that converting into something. So that's five steps from action to potential reward versus the one step of reaching out to past clients about potentially working together. So that's one example of how I think about it, but I actually like to, it's theoretical, but you can also actually use this methodology to start counting the steps between the work and the potential revenue. And I think that can be really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And helping just to, you know, get really clear on the priorities there. I think it's a lot about prioritization, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What are some sort of common financial mistakes that you see creatives and business owners make? How can they avoid them?
I mean, I think that there's so many, right? And I think that the first thing that I always like to think about is there's a lot of shame when we're talking about money. And so I just want to be mindful that any mistakes that I say, this is not, if you make any of these, right, there's no shame in it. I think that we are kind of conditioned not to remember this. So especially for creatives and especially for done-for-you service providers who actually are delivering a deliverable to clients, yeah. The most common mistake I see is not investing some time and energy in your future growth every week. You get busy with clients, you deliver to them, you're really committed to great delivery, but you forget to be fueling your own business. And as a result, you are then in this cycle of ebbs and flows of business rather than a consistent pace. So I would say, if anything, and it doesn't have to be 20 hours a week of marketing your own business, but really think about what is the 3-hour version of what ongoing kind of investing in your own growth can look like, so that you get out of some of this feast or famine type of flow that I've seen a lot of copywriters, web designers, graphic designers, brand strategists, messaging strategists, et cetera, fall into. And it's super easy for that to happen. And I think that you want to really think about, okay, in that limited time that you might have to market your own business, right? This is where staying close to money really matters. It's like, what is the best use of that time? What is the most impactful use of that time? So that is really the first one. I think the second one is really not always being clear or specific enough about how long things take. And so essentially what I've seen happen time and time again is that somebody sells, let's say, a VIP day, right? But then it actually takes them like 3 days to get something done. And then they've devalued their hourly take home. They've decreased it because instead of the one day, so let's just say you assumed it was $150 an hour for that one day, you're basically breaking into 3 days, you're getting $50 an hour. And so you might not even realize it because you're so focused on the delivery piece, but the more time you invest in a deliverable without actually being compensated for that time, the lower rate you're paying yourself. So that's really, I would say, the second one in terms of just making sure that you have an awareness of how long things take. And then on the flip side of that is that sometimes you get better and faster. And so we want to be careful not to get too caught up in the value of the hours, but also the value of the product that we deliver. Yeah. And so I realize I just said like literally two contradicting things.
I know what you mean though.
But it's a little bit of both, and you need to be conscientious about both. And I think sometimes we lean too heavily on one or the other, but I think there's a fine line in the middle there. And then I would say the third piece is undercharging, right? And I think we all know that, especially if you are just beginning or you're not sure what you can charge, or you feel like most of us are coming to our work, even if you are new to running your own business. And I don't know if, you know, like even if you're not, but if you're new to running your own business, it's easy to assume that like, because you're new to that, your rates should be lower. And I can see that within reason, but also if you're coming to running your, like I came to run my business after 10 plus years working in startups. I have a huge kind of breadth of experience that contributes to my clients. And I would say the same is true for anyone who is starting up their own creative business. And so really making sure that you are thinking about your prices, not just in the context of you as a small business owner, but in the larger landscape of your career and your experience.
They're three really good points. And I absolutely resonated with them because I know I've been guilty on at least two out of those three counts. Not treating myself as I would a client. So giving all my energy to a client and then not having enough time to work on my own business, working in the business, not on the business. And also definitely guilty of not realizing how long things take sometimes. And sometimes that's because you're rolling out a new service. And you just don't know until you've actually done it. And sometimes, like you say, you speed up with experience, but charging on a project by project rate rather than an hourly rate can help with that, you know, undercharging as well. When you get quick at doing something, the value you give is still valuable to the client. They're still going to get value from it, but they're not paying you by the hour and you're not undercutting yourself accidentally by, you know, because you can do a job quicker now because you're experienced.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So I'm curious, you've given us some tips there, but, you know, how can freelance business owners and service providers better track their income streams and plan for the future health of their business?
Yeah. So I think a couple things. I think that all of this is one, anytime you, especially if you're selling, like I said, a deliverable based thing, to really try to track the time that it actually takes you so that over time we can make sure that any of those gaps in what your hourly could or should be gets adjusted for. So I think that is a really just easy thing to do. The other thing that I always recommend people do is quite literally track your sales every single day. And this can be really scary for people because it's like some days it's going to be zero.
Yeah.
And that feels crummy because we believe for whatever reason that we should just be selling all the time. And I think I could go on a soapbox moment about how a lot of times, you know, the passive income dream gets sold of like, just so, you know, I've sold $37 courses, a million a day, blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. But some days it's going to be zero. But having that awareness and having that ongoing relationship with your cadence of sales is really important because it helps you to really start to see over time, when are your busier seasons? When are your slower seasons? So it can also protect your anxiety a little bit because while at first you might be like, oh boy, over time you might realize, oh, okay, January, February are often slow for me. I can get really anxious right now or I can lean into this. And I had a client, completely different kind of business. She's a home organizer. And she wrote to me last year and she just was like, I'm finally taking January and February off because these have been my slowest months forever. And I've always just stayed home and gotten anxious about it. And this year I decided to fly to California, enjoy some time with friends, do all these things because I could see with the repeated trends that my business would pick up again based on the work that I was doing. So really getting to know those numbers will actually help you, even if it feels sometimes like a mirror of like, you know, underperforming. I think that also sometimes we don't realize what's actually earning us the most money. And so having really tracking your sales also gives you insights into like what offers are actually performing best and what offers are not just performing best overall in terms of volume, but actually what is performing best in terms of you being able to pay yourself, you being able to manage your bandwidth and your time. And for a lot of people, what I've seen is that they invest a lot of time and energy in marketing and selling lower priced offers. But when they look at their numbers and when they're consistently looking at their numbers, they realize that their quote unquote real revenue, the money that pays the bills, that pays them, is coming from fewer higher priced clients. And just shifting that narrative a little bit comes from kind of being in touch with your sales. So if you don't want to do it every day, that's okay. But if you can do it at least once a week, you will really start to see kind of where you're headed. And it really does help to fuel you staying close to the money because as you see the incremental weeks where you might be a little bit off course or not quite getting to what your goal is, it helps to reground you and recenter you on what the right work might be to help you drive towards those goals.
Yeah, brilliant. That's genius, really. It's so simple, but when you say it like that, you know, I know one of your mantras, I want to say, is it's not staying close to the money. It's the other one, doing the right work at the right time.
Yep.
Isn't it?
Yep.
As you say, is staying close to the money all about chasing clients and working more?
Mm-hmm. I love this question because, like I said, kind of at the outset, it does have a little bit of that like energy around it. And it's not, it's about efficiency, I would say. It's about making it easier to hit your goals in fewer steps. Now, my caveat to that is that I've worked with clients where we realize like they need to be more connected to and proactive about reaching out to potential clients, you know, actually pitching themselves to people. But that is part of a larger strategy that we see fits into their business overall. But it's not easy, weird DMs to people being like, I can help you make $1 million overnight or whatever that might look like. And so staying close to the money is actually just about, I really value our personal time. I really value this idea that like, yes, we're running our own businesses. And there's this like larger context of the fact that like running your own business is hard and it's a lot of work and all of those things. And maybe that always has to be true. I think it varies by person. But how do we make it the least amount of work possible? How do we I'm always like, how do we do the bare minimum here to still get the results that we want? Because it's great to do the most to get the results that we want. But if there is a more streamlined, simpler version of that, then let's do that version. That sounds way better to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of doing more with less time and working smarter, not harder.
Exactly.
That work that has more impact rather than turning ourselves into productivity machines, which often we think we have to do, be more productive. But that right. risks burnout. And who wants that? So that's great. Leveraging. It's about leveraging work, isn't it, for greater
yeah. results.
And I do like what we said as well, just cycling back to talking about checking your sales figures on a daily or certainly a weekly basis. Because those of us who would be afraid of that sort of thing because we're, you know, scared of looking at the numbers a little bit, the numbers give us anxiety. But actually what yeah. you were saying is that doing this over time, starting to recognize those patterns in your busy season, your off, you know, your quiet seasons, actually reduces anxiety. That's a really mm-hmm. nice reframe for anybody who does get anxious about looking at the numbers. Because the overall effect of regularly checking in and knowing your sales and knowing what's earning and what's not will help calm and quell your anxieties over time. So that's really brilliant. Okay. I'm learning that as a business owner, what you do as a business owner does come down to two things. You know, number one, how much money you want to make each month. And number two, how much money you made last month. And it's the gap between what you have or what you hope or what you plan to make that helps you reveal the next steps, you know, the work that you should be doing. So often we think because of that, I need to get more leads. I need to get better leads, which is fine. But it's how you define that next step, which is important, because getting more leads isn't necessarily an action to take. That's an outcome we need to get. So to what actions do you recommend to your clients to help them leverage their business activity and start closing that gap between what they have and the money that they want?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a revenue strategist, right, I really think that my work lives at the overlap of three things. So people's products and offers, people's marketing strategy, and then people's kind of execution operation strategy. And I say that because when I'm looking at these larger challenges, I'm kind of thinking about all three. And I think the thing here that I would really want to kind of zoom in on is marketing, because leads is really about how we market ourselves, how we get ourselves out there for people to eventually hire us. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that I see people making when it comes to how they market their businesses, and this, by the way, is going to dovetail really nicely into how we think about what we do in those limited windows of time that we can market our own business when we're busy with clients. And so marketing as a big bucket is really overwhelming. And we tend to conflate marketing with sales, right? Like I market, people buy. And what I would challenge anyone to do is to really think about marketing as a more, marketing can be really split into five core areas. And so a lot of the times when I'm working with my clients on their strategic priorities, we're thinking about the five core functions of marketing. And those are the levers that they pull. So the five core functions of marketing are lead generation, which is bringing new people into your orbit. Nurturing, which is how we build know, like, and trust with those folks. Conversion, which is the moment in time that we sell to those people. Delivery, which is the quality of the experience that they have working with us, which I always need to add, I think is like the unsung hero of marketing, because we think about marketing about being like new potential clients, and actually like we forget to keep marketing ourselves to our existing clients.
Yes.
And then retention and upsell. And that's really just about how we increase the lifetime value of a customer, whether it's through a specific, an actual customer paying us more over time or them referring us to other people, but, you know, having our customers be the key drivers of our business growth. So when I start to think about these five areas, what shifts is that rather than thinking I need more leads, it gives us more choices. It starts to give us more control because these are all levers that we can pull. And so what has happened when I've been working with clients through this is that we'll realize that they just left corporate, and while they feel like lead generation, they're starting from scratch, they actually have a pretty strong corporate network that they can maybe nurture differently and better to drive sales. And so it shifts the narrative from lead generation is the goal into nurturing is the goal. I've also worked with clients who work with people once and then don't have any other ways to either to re-engage them, like I said, whether it's through referrals, affiliate programs, or other offers. And so I've worked with clients who've almost doubled their revenue just by focusing on the end of like this upsell part of their customer journey. Because rather than focusing only on leads, it's like, I now have this huge, this growing network of people who I've worked with, who I've delivered really well to. How do I actually capitalize on that more? And people, like I said, have almost doubled their revenue just by focusing on that one area and that one marketing area. So in terms of this idea of staying close to the money, right, and doing the right work, it can show up in all of these different kind of core functions of marketing. And so as you're listening, I would think about in your ecosystem and in your world, like, where do you see the biggest gap is? And I'm always going to challenge people to just assume it's not lead generation to start, because that's the, in some ways, the easiest one, the one that we, for whatever reason, it's the most nagging one for a lot of us. But when I get into people's businesses and when we start to unpack what's happening on the marketing strategy side, what is happening in the customer journey, we actually realize that there's other opportunities that we have a lot more control over that we can do more with to really capitalize on the community, the audience that we already have. So that is just a high level view of that. But let me know if you have specific follow-up questions now that I kind of went through that.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, the one thing that stands out to me is that despite the fact that you are, call yourself a revenue strategist, you actually, the marketing bit is a really key part of what you teach and what you deliver, isn't it? And that's really quite refreshing to hear that that lead gen doesn't have to be the primary focus. There are other levers that you can pull. Because I think that is something that, that's talked to us, you know, just got to do more, just got to get more leads and more top of funnel activity. And but actually we already have a network, we already have relationships. There's a lot of things that we have that we're just not leveraging. So the fact that you can look into those different things and then help your clients with that, I think is really good. Can you share any tips on how to make sure that your pricing and business model are set up to maximize profitability?
Yeah. So I think the best thing to start with is to look at your history. Now, I realize that some people listening may not have a long history yet, and so we can talk about that too. But I think that the more we can glean from what we've already done, the more we can know what's going to work as we move forward. And I think that sometimes, especially when we do choose to start our own businesses, we can sometimes be in the like ongoing pursuit of novelty, which is fun and exciting, but may not be the most fruitful for our work and for our businesses. And so when I think about, you know, how we can really set ourselves up for profitability, I think one, doing this exercise of going back and seeing how long are things taking me? What am I actually delivering? Am I over delivering? Do my prices make sense based on what I'm delivering, or do I need to increase those or not? I think those are some really, really key factors. I also think that one example that comes to mind for copywriters is that most copywriters who I've worked with as clients have a very long intake process, which is still time that we're dedicating to this potential client and often doesn't get accounted for in what we're actually charging or delivering. So being honest about the full kind of suite of what it is that you do, I think can give some really valuable insights into how you can be more profitable, effective, and kind of just strategic about your pricing. The other piece that's really important is that we need to listen to our audience, right? I think product market fit is the hardest thing to achieve, but it's also essential. And what I see a lot is that people come in and they are sometimes copying, pasting other people's business models. They've seen something work for one person. They really like the idea of one business model, whatever that might be, but they forgot to actually liaise with their audience and their customers to understand, is that what they want? Like, is that actually what feels like it would deliver something to them? And so what happens is that either our offers go out there and they're kind of not that compelling to our people, or we're creating something that is like over delivering so much, but actually what our audience needs is something simpler and more streamlined. And so in terms of really maintaining that integrity of the value of what we deliver, making sure that we're meeting our customers where they are with what they want and what they desire is far more important to me than how exactly we price or that sort of thing. But to establish that fit and to make sure that we're building what people need and want from us, I think that is a huge component that people forget to do, because as entrepreneurs, I think sometimes there's all this pressure to feel like we should just know, like we should just have it figured out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, let's figure it out with the people who are going to buy from us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think often when you're going through a project with a client as a sort of new business or as a new service provider, you are sometimes scared to ask the questions, you know, how is this working for you? Am I delivering what you want? Because it's almost like, especially if you're a perfectionist tendency, you want to, you know, do your best for the client. You want it to be perfect. So you over-deliver. So you, without realizing that that is actually a problem or the client doesn't need it. Have you got any strategies? How do you advise that people get this research, get this feedback from the people who matter to know whether their service is delivering at the right level or it's too much or too little?
So I think there's a couple ways to do it. I think there's three key groups that we want to really look at. I think one is people who have bought from you, understanding why they bought, what has been the best part of it, right? Like what has been their overall experience. I think the other group of people is people who have said no to working with you, understanding why, and not in an indignant way, but actually with curiosity. Like what about it didn't feel like a fit to you, so that you can choose at that point whether you change anything, right? Someone might be like, well, actually, I wanted someone who was on call 24/7. And you can be like, okay, well, that's not a fit for me. So I'm not going to adapt to that. Or someone might be like, actually, what I really need is someone who does more asynchronous work rather than too many meetings, because I don't have a lot of time. And maybe that's something that you could adapt to. So past existing or past clients, really helpful. People who've said no. And then people who you'd be really excited to work with. I think that we sometimes forget to just be like, hey, I would love to interview you. This is not a sales call. This is not a loosely veiled pitch. I legitimately want to learn from you because you are in the category of people who I would really aspire to work with. And I would love to ask you a few questions. And then in terms of what you ask, I think that it's really about, I think, subtlety and reading between the lines. So understanding what are your, you know, let's just say you're a copywriter. What are your gaps in your copy? What keeps you up at night about your copy? What do you need from someone who is writing your copy for you? Asking those questions. What I generally recommend staying away from is pricing questions. People are not usually very good at knowing the prices of things. And I think sometimes people will be like, would you pay $450 for X, Y, and Z? And as consumers, it is very hard to assess pricing if we are not in the mindset to buy. So pricing, I think we would just, unless you hear from people who said no, that pricing was the reason, just don't ask like future people so much about pricing because they might not necessarily know.
Mm-hmm. But really more concerned with finding out what outcomes people want and also what deliverables people need from your service. And do they need those extra, you know, 1 hour
exactly.
of meetings, or would they prefer it delivered in an email and have a check-in every few weeks or something instead?
Exactly.
Yeah. Finally, I just want to ask you then, are there any tools or systems or resources that could help small businesses and freelancers and copywriters like me manage their finances better, stay close to the money better? Yeah. Anything that you've come across or indeed your own program, talk to me about that.
Yeah, all of it. I would say resources that are not mine. I really like the book Profit First. I think that can be a really helpful, simple tool. Second thing, a spreadsheet where truly it can be as simple as the date and sales that day. That is all you really need to start. I mean, then you can get a little bit more nuanced, but as an initial place, if you're not tracking your sales, like we talked about, doing that. And then I also help people map out their revenue roadmap so that they can really figure out what they need to be selling at what pace and what cadence to hit their revenue goals. And so if that's of interest, I'm always super happy to do that. I do that in a short one-on-one intensive kind of session, and then off you go with your revenue roadmap to stay close to the money and do the right work.
Yeah, fabulous. That sounds great. Yeah, Profit First. I have read that book in the past, but I feel like that's a book that and I've applied some of the lessons, but I could really revisit that. It's I can't remember his surname.
Yeah, Mike Michalowicz, I think.
Yeah, so that's a great book. And Stay Close to the Money. I have been on one of your Rev Up Your Revenue workshops, and I can vouch for the effectiveness of that. It was really helpful. I know you've got a program called Revenue School as well, so I'll link to that in the show notes. But thank you so much, Frenchie, for walking me through that today. I really appreciate your time, and it's great to have you on Cracking Copy.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's such a pleasure to be here, and I have loved chatting with you, and this is my favorite thing to talk about. So to anybody listening, whether you want to just have a quick DM chat or anything like that, ask me about staying close to the money, because I love to dig in.
Perfect. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Cracking Copy podcast with Ella Hoyos and Minnie McBride. Don't miss out on future episodes by making sure you hit subscribe down below to keep up with all our podcasts. And more details and resources are in our show notes. So we'll see you next time.